Welcome to How I Built My Fundraising Consultancy, the stories behind the people driving results in the nonprofit sector.
And it's really about managing relationships and figuring out who are the most important people to you. So I do network with a lot of people, and I have a fair amount of fundraising consultants that I work with, and I've created a list. So I even have a real simple thing to do is on my phone, I created a group. I call it my food chain. And I have about 30 people on that list now. These are the top people that either I can give a referral to or they can give one to me. And so I'm really intentional. So when I'm traveling, I'm on the road, sitting in an airport or wherever, I'll just go through my list and say, oh, I haven't talked to Brian in a while. Let me call Brian, see how he's doing. Let me see how I can help him.
A quick announcement. As a listener of the podcast, we are making the Engagement Fundraising audiobook available to you free of charge. Just go to imarketsmart.com/exclusive-podcast-offer. As a thank you for listening, we wanted to give everyone free access to Greg's Engagement Fundraising audiobook that you can get on Audible or Apple Books for $15. Once again, just visit imarketsmart.com/exclusive-podcast-offer. That's imarketsmart.com/exclusive-podcast-offer. Thanks for listening to the podcast, and we hope you enjoy Greg's book.
Coming up is my interview with Joe Tumalo, the CEO of Gift Planning Development. Joe is an expert at building relationships and helping nonprofits focus on a donor-centric approach. Without further delay, here's my interview with Joe.
I'm here today with Joseph Tumalo, CEO at Gift Planning Development. Welcome to the podcast.
Tim, pleasure to be here.
So first off, I wanted to just ask you where did your journey start with working with gift planning and nonprofits in general?
I spent the first half of my working career in a family business, in sales, sales management, sales training, and got to a point where I was just ready for something different. And I was working with a life coach. After a couple of sessions, she kept saying, you should look at the nonprofit space. Every time we get together, you talk about your volunteering and work with and on boards and fundraising. Is that something you ever looked at? And I really kind of dismissed it because I was so used to being independent, working on my own, and really not having to answer to too many people. And at that time, a good friend of mine introduced me to some folks who were in the plan giving marketing space. Knew nothing about it. They needed a salesperson, business development person. So I started that journey. That was 2002. It just evolved. And then the more I did that, the more I realized I'm ready for the next thing. And I really wanted to start doing consulting. My longtime friend, Brian Sagristano, has been a mentor of mine for many years. I looked at what he was doing. I said, I want to do what you're doing. So I started out about 6 years ago, my own practice, helping people build plan giving programs, just like Brian was doing, and he and I worked together on a lot of clients. Fast forward, unfortunately, Brian has developed some health issues, so I bought his business just this year, Gift Planning Development, in May of this year. So he's still doing some consulting for us, and he's doing well health-wise, hoping that he'll be able to, or he'll have an interest in doing some more work with us as time goes by.
Do you know kind of how the company in the early days kind of got its start and developed over the years?
The short answer is that Brian had his own company. He was a one-man show for many years. For the folks in your audience that are just starting in consulting or thinking about getting consulting, Brian was a bit of an anomaly because he is one of the thought leaders in the industry. Not that it's easy, but it did take him a few years to really get in the groove and fill the pipeline. But when you're considered a thought leader and you're writing these big books and you're speaking all over the country, it's a different way to grow your business than someone who is not as well known or not necessarily the expert. So I think the experts, you know, when you look at Catherine Myrie, Brian, all these great people, and forgive me for those that I'm not thinking of at the moment. Not that they didn't, I don't know Catherine that well, but she has a reputation as being an expert. And that's just a different dynamic. There's people tend to call them as opposed to what we're doing here is I have a regional reputation and I'm building more of a national one. It's a different way to build the business. So when I took over Brian's business in May of 2018, I had my own practice and I was doing well. I knew that if I wanted to build something scalable, that I couldn't do it alone and I'd have to change the business model. So I have longtime friends that I've been so blessed to have working with me, experts in the field of planned giving and very highly trusted. So for those, for your audience, again, that are maybe in the consulting side of things, one of the things I would suggest is take a look at your, what's your vision, clarify your vision. What do you want your business to look like 5, 10, 15 years? And do you want to make it scalable? And that could change the way that you build the business. Most consultants will just, it's just them. So we're doing everything. Right. Mm-hmm. And not that that's wrong. It depends on your vision. My vision, there was no reason for me to buy Brian's business if I was just going to stay the same. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So I decided, you know what, I'm 58. I want to spend another 5-7 years going at it really hard. And this is kind of a cool thing. It helps Brian and his family out. And it's an opportunity for me to try to build something scalable.
Are you offering different services to the clients you worked with prior to what you're able to do now with, you know, a team in place?
At the core is helping people get their planned giving program to the next level, where you're just starting or where they have a well-established program. That remains the core, but it's offering people different options based on where they are, based on their resources, the size of their team, their budget financially, and being able to package it in a way that people can quickly relate to and say, you know what, that's a great package. And customize it as well for their needs. At the end of the day, the deliverables are the same, but just packaging it in a different way, hopefully in more munchable chunks, you know, more easy to digest pieces.
Yeah. So what's your day-to-day role look like as CEO now?
One of the thought leaders, authors who really had a big impact on me many years ago is a gentleman named Michael Gerber. And he wrote a book called The E-Myth. He's still around. He's still going strong in his 80s. One of the big, big takeaways that I talk about, we're talking about it now, I talk about it daily, is we're either working on our business or in our business. And most entrepreneurs, and even fundraisers, spend most of their time working in the business. This is delivering the stuff that we're supposed to be delivering, responding to emails, we're generating proposals, we're working directly with clients, answering questions, we're taking phone calls, all important stuff. But if you really want to build your business and make it scalable, we need to be working on the business. So on the business is looking for new clients. It's developing marketing content. It's expanding your network. It's picking up the phone and calling other consultants, which I do on a regular basis, and asking other consultants, how can I help you with your business? And so those are all on the business things. So as a CEO with this new business, I'm really focused on or being conscious of how much time a week am I spending on the business? And I track that. So I have a goal to right now, my goal is to spend 8 hours a week on the business. And that, again, that's in addition to all the client, direct client work I'm doing. And it's really interesting to really take a look at how much time you're actually spending in that role on the business. And I have that conversation with people in all types of industries, business owners. And it's really, it changes the way that you spend your day looking at, am I working in the business or on the business? Just and being conscious of it, intentional about it.
Do you use a certain tool or app to track it, or is it just on a notepad?
I use an online timer. There are a lot of free ones out there. Toggle, T-O-G-G-L is one I use.
Yeah.
And I will track it. So when I sit down to work, do an on-the-business task, I will start the clock. And then when I stop, when I'm doing that, I shut down my email, Outlook, and I shut down my cell phone. And I'm usually doing it early in the morning when it wouldn't be client time anyway. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier partnering with consultants. How do you make the decision of if you need to bring someone on directly into the company versus partnering with another consultant?
This business is so much about reputation and credibility and trust. So you have to be really, really careful about who you bring in. And again, I've been lucky. I have David Toll, I have Wayne Olson, Liz Kahn. These are people I've known over a decade, who well-respected, spent a lot of time with these people before I brought them in. It's really testing people to see. It's not just about being a technician, right? I mean, we all know people in different businesses who are really, really smart and really good at what they do. At the same time, they may not be good at follow-up. That may take a long time to respond. They may say that they're going to send something on a certain day and 3 days go by and we're chasing them, right? I learned it's not just somebody that's technically proficient. And nowadays, with everybody so busy, it's can they follow up promptly? Are they good with the details? Are they thorough? Can they think forward to be proactive with people? So I believe it's about, if you don't really know the person, testing them. Give them little low-risk things that they can do and just see how they act, right?
Mm-hmm.
And see if they're able to deliver that consistency. So another, if I may reference Michael Gerber again, the other big takeaway I got from him and his book, E-Myth, is pretend your business, you're going to franchise your business. And he used the McDonald's example, that if you were to go to a McDonald's in College Park, Maryland, or one in Little Rock, Arkansas, you're going to get the same experience. Why? Because they standardized and developed a process for everything they do so that the customer gets the same experience wherever they are and whoever's delivering it.
Yeah.
Now, that's an extreme example. And I'm not saying that we want to be that rigid where the client feels like, you know what, I don't want a take it or leave it. Clients want options, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't give them a take it or leave it. Give them several options, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying to be that rigid, but when you start to processize, if that's a word, everything you do, then yes, I can deliver the same experience. So if David's working with a client or Liz is working with a client or I'm working with a client, the client is getting, yes, we all have our own styles, but they're getting the same content. They're getting the same process. Once we've done that and have that in place, then we can train other people to do that, to follow. Here's our process. You're going to come work with us. You may be a consultant and may be used to doing things a certain way. And I'm certainly open, receptive to your way of doing things. But if you're going to work with us, you need to follow our system and process.
Understood. And what is the typical process like of getting a client up and running?
We have surveys. We have checklists. Depends on what we're delivering. One of our deliverables is an assessment where their clients are paying us just to do an assessment, to come in for a couple of days and interview people and look at every aspect of their program. So that certainly is a different onboarding than someone who doesn't really have a program or has a very reactive program. But we, of course, we always start with an assessment of the program, of the people. And then one of the things that I started integrating is having some type of measurable, which is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I'm part of a group of other consultants, Constellation Advancement, here mostly on, they're all over the country, but most of us live in the Northeast Corridor of the U.S. And most of the other consultants are capital campaign consultants, which we don't do. It's just not our specialty.
Yeah.
Not that it's easy, but they're able to put an ROI on their work to say, if you hire us and you have a goal of raising $50 million, we can kind of get a sense and the gifts are coming in and you're paying us. With planned giving, as we know, these gifts take a while to come to fruition. So it's harder as a consultant in our space to show an ROI, to say if you're going to spend X amount of dollars with us over a course of a year. But we can look at different metrics to see, is the needle moving? You know, are you generating more planned giving conversations? Are you adding more legacy society members? There are things that we can put in place. We can't get, I always say, I can't guarantee results, but we guarantee our work.
Now, how much of the work is done virtually versus in person with the client?
I certainly tolerate getting on planes and traveling. I don't enjoy it. I mean, I love it when I get to the client. That's
yeah.
fun, right? There's nothing like being face-to-face. That's really what drives me. I love face-to-face client work. I don't like air travel. So I put up with it. And so I try to do first session face-to-face and then subsequently work on Zoom or Skype or something, one of the online mm-hmm. tools.
Yep.
And most people are fine with it nowadays. I think for some clients, it's even less work for them. They don't have to feel like they have to entertain me or get a lot of work done. And the bottom line is we can charge less. If I have to
right.
get on mm-hmm. a plane, it's at least 2 days. Even if it's a 1 day on site, it's still 2 days with travel.
And it's 100% of your attention that whole day.
Yeah. So I always tell people, I can charge you. We can charge you less if we do some of it remotely. So people like that. So it's a combination, but mostly remote. And you know, in your business as well, more and more people are accepting the online
yeah.
alternative.
So your business focuses on planned giving, as you've said, and you know, it's pretty obvious by the company name itself. How often do you start work with the client on planned giving and they love the work you're doing and they're wanting to have you help with major gifts or something that's not your specialty? Do you just say, no, that's not our focus. That's not what we do.
Yes. Well, first of all, I mean, if we are, and I'm going to use a term that's thrown around so much, donor-centered philanthropy, right? That's so overused, but I think it's often misunderstood. What does that really mean? If we are truly, truly donor-centric, right, we're saying to the donor as fundraisers, we have all these options for you. We have annual gifts. We have pledges. We have major gifts. We have these deferred gifts. Here's my toolkit, and let's figure out what you want to accomplish through your giving for us, the people we serve, and for you and your family and your legacy. And I'm going to offer all these tools. So there's a lot of talk about breaking down the silos in our business, right? Mm-hmm. Where major gift officers are just focused on outright gifts and plain giving people are just focused on deferred gifts. To practice what we preach and stay true to our core beliefs, it's just natural that we're going to get into major gift work. So yes, I think, again, for the consultants out there, again, it's your choice, but I think it's important to try to specialize. Certainly, we're not going to turn work away. The major gift work, I still do a lot of it. It should be integrated in plan giving. Plan giving should not exist in a silo. So the capital campaign opportunity, I will refer to one of the folks in my network. I think it would be of value to your listeners at some point in this podcast to share some ideas on building a network, and managing and leveraging relationships to help you grow your business. So I think it's important to talk about at some point.
If you're friends with the capital campaign consultant in that network, that person would refer you work as well when it's outside of their scope of what they do.
Absolutely. And I'm an extrovert. I like to be friends with everybody. I'm friendly with other plan giving consultants. There are several that I talk to all the time because I think it's important to have an abundance mentality. I believe for all of us, whether it's business or not business, my core value is it's all about relationships, and I really value relationships, and I'm very intentional about my relationships. I think there's a study maybe done or a book about relationships that says it can really only have 250 or so real true relationships with people. We have acquaintances, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But and even that's a lot. So I have a business coach I've worked with forever, a guy named Bruce Morrow, and he has a partner named Dave Hartman, and they have a company called My Food Chain, and they call it food chain management. And it's really about managing relationships and figuring out who are the most important people to you. So I do network with a lot of people, and I have a fair amount of fundraising consultants that I work with, and I've created a list. So I even have a real simple thing to do is on my phone, I created a group. I call it My Food Chain. And I have about 30 people on that list now. These are the top people that either I can give a referral to or they can give one to me. And so I'm really intentional. So when I'm traveling, I'm on the road, sitting in an airport or wherever, I'll just go through my list and say, oh, I haven't talked to Brian in a while. Let me call Brian, see how he's doing. Let me see how I can help him. So I'll typically get voicemail and I'll say, Brian, Joe Tumalo checking in. We haven't talked in a little while. What are you working on? How can I help you? Who can I introduce you to? These are the types of people that will reciprocate.
Mm-hmm.
I've qualified them enough to know that they're going to come back to me and say, well, this is what I'm looking for. At the end of that, they're going to say, well, what are you working on? How can I help you? So it's finding people who get it, who are open to reciprocating. I'll reference another great book that had a lot of impact on me by an author named Bob Berg, and it's called The Go-Giver. So it's really about finding people who understand that you're going to get a lot more in life if you help other people get what they want first. It sounds corny, but it works. And so it's really about being intentional about your relationships and prioritizing these people. We can't talk to everybody. We can't go to lunch with everybody. We can't spend a ton of time. Not to be rude, but at some point we have to spend time with the people that are going to help us move our business forward, and we in turn help them as well.
Yeah, it's the same in fundraising. It's not friend raising, you're making relationships with potential donors.
Right. Yeah, well said, right? So just like we have a system for qualifying donors, right? And I talk about that a lot when I develop content, my podcasts and videos, about always be qualifying. We're always qualifying donors to see where are they, what category. Are they in the category of, I just moved on, I just really don't want to support you guys anymore? Are they in the category of, I love you guys, I'm going to keep sending you a check, but I don't want a relationship or don't want to do anything more? Or are they in that category of, love you guys, always open to conversations about doing more? It's that last category where we should be spending most of our time with the donors who are just love us, love the work, are engaged, and want to just keep going and looking for ways to do more. And of course, plan giving is a great way to help them do that.
Yeah. So you mentioned referrals is a huge part of getting new clients. Are there other ways you market your company to get new clients?
Are there other ways? Yes. Are there other effective ways? No.
Okay. I mean,
I mean, you guys do a great job. Market Smart does. You guys, I look at you guys as the premier, or the poster child, if you will, of how to market. And obviously, you spend a lot of time and money doing that. As a smaller business, it's hard to do that. I know your model keeps evolving, but you're certainly, I think, one of the better known doing it right. So all our business comes from referrals. I do the marketing because I just feel like I need to. I don't know if it works or not. And I, frankly, I'm in a spot right now where I'm trying to make the business scalable, well beyond me or any one or two people, have to take a long, hard look at, do I really want to start spending serious dollars on the marketing? And that, again, for the consultants that are just starting out or really want to expand, I think that's a big decision. It's not like we have to build buildings. We're not buying equipment to expand our business, right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it comes down to the marketing.
Yeah.
The marketing I do now doesn't take a lot of time. And it's not that expensive in the grand scheme of things. I get a lot of likes on LinkedIn and Facebook and YouTube. Does that translate to clients? I don't think so, because all the clients that we get, we're getting phone calls from people. So probably not a good person to ask, because I haven't figured that out, that part, the marketing part out yet, as far as our personal business development.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, you know what, I need to do it. I need to keep sticking our face out there in front of people. And hopefully when something comes up, they're going to think of us. So it's hard to measure.
Yeah. So in the early days of your business as a just independent consultant, drafting up the contract, did you learn some things from that? That some errors maybe you made initially with just what the expectations were and everything like that?
Another big influence on my business is a guy named Alan Weiss, W-E-I-S-S. He's all over the internet. He has about 50 books. And the one that really, really had big impact on me is called Million Dollar Consulting. Highly recommend it. He really gets it and has a process for consultants how to scale their business. And so I got a lot out of Alan's writings as far as a proposal. One of the big things that I've heard from people where we've been awarded a contract is they said, you know what, especially on the capital campaign side, we get consultants' proposals and they're boilerplate. I'm really not sure they're listening to our needs. So I think number one is the proposal should really show prospective clients you understand their situation and you understand what they're trying to accomplish. And then as you build the proposal and you start to lay out your deliverables, if you connect the dots, connect your deliverables with their challenges and their problems and show them exactly, this is how we're going to address this issue. Then, as I said, offer them options. Don't give them a take it or leave it. Give them options. If you look at the psychology of threes, if you give a lower priced option, a mid-level option, and a high level option, most people will take the middle options. Depending on what it is, we often like to give clients three options. On the deliverable, again, I like to add measurables. How are we going to measure whether this is effective, right? Mm-hmm. One of the stigmas, I think, with consultants in all industries is, well, I think there's two big ones. Number one, there's even jokes about it, that we're paying a consultant to tell us what we already know, right?
Yeah.
And I think the second one is we're paying a consultant to give us information that we're not going to use. And nobody wants to see nonprofits waste donors' money. So I think the proposal should really talk about the fact that we're only going to give you what you need. And we have to have standard processes and we can't make everything 100% customizable, but we're certainly going to do that as best we can to fit your needs as the client and still be fiscally responsible as a business. So I think those are the big components, is showing the client you really understand the situation, tying your solutions to solve their problems specifically, give them options, and set the expectation up front to show them that we're going to do everything we can to make sure this is working for both of us throughout the length of our engagement.
This episode is brought to you by us here at MarketSmart and Engagement Fundraising by Greg Warner. In this quick break, I want to remind everyone to go to imarketsmart.com/exclusive-podcast-offer to download the Engagement Fundraising audiobook for free. This offer is only available to listeners of the podcast. It's our way of saying thank you for listening, and we really hope you enjoy the book. Once again, go to imarketsmart.com/exclusive-podcast-offer to take advantage of this promotion, available only to listeners of the podcast. Now, back to the episode.
With that, let's get to lightning round, just serious quick questions and answers. What's the best piece of business advice you've ever received?
Former self-development guru, pioneer Zig Ziglar, said you can get anything you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want first.
What book would you recommend to those getting started and why?
The Alan Weiss Million Dollar Consulting, because he lays every aspect of your business out and he has a process. I love process and structure.
What's your favorite personal productivity habit?
Writing out calls that I need to make that week. Monday morning, I write out on a piece of paper the donors I need to call that week. And then for my personal business growth, I write out the people that I want to call for my business. And I make sure that by Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock, I don't quit until I've called all the people on both of those lists for the week.
Desk or car, what would you clean first?
Car.
Tea or coffee?
Tea.
What do clients never ask you that you wish they did?
The contract has ended. How do we keep this thing going? How do we keep our engagement going?
What's the most common error that you see nonprofits make?
They think that plan giving and major gifts is an either or, that we can't have cash now and cash later. But we can have cash now and cash later.
What charities do you admire or support?
My wife and I have a donor advice fund, which is great. Oh, they're becoming very popular. They're very easy to get into. It makes it fun as a donor. It helps us more focus. It sounds cliche, but the donor advice fund has helped us get more focused and be a little more discerning about who we're giving to. One of the things that we've done is that we make all our clients, my clients, I make an equal beneficiary of the donor advice fund. So when my wife and I pass, and we don't have children, but when we pass, whatever's in that fund will be distributed to all my clients over the years. So it's a way for me to show clients I'm invested in them. And it's just a great way. I recommend this to all fundraisers, consultants who are, whether you're focused on plan giving or not, is to be a plan giving donor for a couple charities. And so you know what it feels like to actually to do that. We do have a fund that we've developed, an endowed fund at Penn Medicine, University of Pennsylvania, in the brain cancer research department in memory of my sister who passed from brain cancer. So I do a lot of personal fundraising to build that endowed fund to fund research to find a cure for brain cancer. So that's a real near and dear cause to our hearts.
Yeah, wonderful. Where can people find more information about your services?
Giftplanningdevelopment.com. Giftplanningdevelopment.com.
Well, thank you, Joseph, for your time this morning. It's been great chatting with you.
Likewise, my best to all. And I'm happy to, if anybody has any questions, they can email me, joe@giftplanningdevelopment.com. Always happy to share what I'm learning on my journey.
Great. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks for listening to this episode of How I Built My Fundraising Consultancy, presented by MarketSmart. If you like the show, make sure to review it in Apple Podcasts and pass it along to a colleague.
I also wanted to remind everyone to visit imarketsmart.com/exclusive-podcast-offer to download the Engagement Fundraising audiobook for free. Once again, that's imarketsmart.com/exclusive-podcast-offer.
Thanks for listening.